there, everyone. Welcome to Australian PI Podcast, Episode 6. I'm Natalie, and I'm coming to you from the headquarters of Cloak Investigations. We have another interesting show ahead of us today, along the lines of deception detection. So a really good one for PIs out there, particularly those doing factual investigation. We'll be talking to Jeremy Kesby. He's one of Australia's foremost experts on deception detection, lie detection, in other words. And he's going to be talking to us about the unique skill of deceptionese, learning how to pick those telltale signs that someone's not being truthful. So he's a really fascinating guy, and I think you're really going to enjoy hearing about what he does and how he does it. Okay, before we hear from Jeremy Kesby, I want to talk to you about another cool app that I have that I think is going to be really useful for PIs out there. It's called Vehicle Log by Gun Software. It's a GPS logging system that you can use on your smartphone, and it logs your journeys. So how many kilometres you've done from start to finish, the start date, the end date. You can put in the purpose of your journey, and it calculates everything that you need for the Australian Taxation Office. It's fully ATO compliant, and it's basically a virtual logbook. So instead of having to scribble in your little shabby little notebook that you keep in your glove compartment, you can do everything that you need to do on your log on your iPhone, and it's as accurate as a GPS. So it calculates the percentage of business use of a vehicle. It integrates with your calendars, contacts, favourites, and it can generate high quality PDF reports. So it's suitable for anyone who's working as a sole trader, subcontracting, where you need to put in your mileage and that sort of thing, and good for larger organisations too, who have fleets of vehicles and several people out on the road. So you can keep multiple logbook periods. As I said before, it calculates and reports on your percentage business use, so you can opt to put in all your private trips as well, although that's not necessary for taxation purposes. And then it publishes the reports in CSV files or PDF format, and you can send them straight through to your accountant or whoever does your books. So it's a really handy little app, and it works really, really well. But like any logbook situation, you do need to remember to keep, to start it and stop it at the end of each journey. So it doesn't mean that you have to start it and stop it every time you stop the car. If you're following someone, for instance, you can just keep the journey going for the entire follow, and just turn it off at the end of the day. But one little tip that I will give you if you're using this app is, because it uses your GPS, it is going to be very battery hungry. So when you've got this in use, you really need to make sure that it's plugged in to the charger in the car, so that it's constantly getting charged. Otherwise, you will find out that you'll run very low on battery with this one. So, if you're doing a foot follow or something like that, if you're getting out of your vehicle at any stage and you're converting to a foot follow, then you must, at some point, sort of fairly early in the piece, you probably need to make sure that you turn off the vehicle log. Otherwise, it will keep using your GPS, and you'll find that you run out of battery. So that's just one little downside to it that I've found. But as long as you keep it plugged in, it works really well, and it's really handy for keeping your records. That was our app of the day.
Today Today I'm speaking with lie detection guru Jeremy Kesby. He's a deception detection specialist and behavioural profiling expert, which in a nutshell means he's got the lowdown on liars and their telltale behaviours. So he's fluent in deceptionese, which is a term that he's just taught me today. I love it. And he wants to teach you how to spot a liar too. He's holding a deception detection masterclass, which we're running in November, and I'll tell you more about that later. Hi, Jeremy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Jeremy, you were a private investigator for 10 years before you decided to specialise in this field. Now you're consulting to large organisations like the RSPCA. What led you down this path in the first place?
Well, I've been a factual investigator as opposed to a surveillance investigator. So that means I've specialised in interviewing people. And so I've conducted investigations into suspected insurance fraud, workers' compensation, internal investigations, including misconduct and what have you. And so over the years, I've interviewed thousands and thousands of people. And I knew on occasion in my gut that I was being lied to. So I've been lied to thousands and thousands of times as well. But what was frustrating for me was that I didn't have any kind of framework other than my gut feelings to confirm my suspicions that I was being lied to. So I sought out that information and I started my path down self-directed learning. I read a million books, took online courses, and then most recently went to the States and took two advanced deception detection courses in Los Angeles.
So you went to the States, you learnt the craft, so to speak, and you came back to Australia and decided this is what I want to do now.
Yeah.
With my new skills, and you've become a consultant to some of these large organisations. Can you tell me what you do for the organisations that you consult to? How are your skills useful in a sort of a business context?
Well, one of the things I can do for them from a teaching perspective is if they have key staff that would benefit from being able to read people and detect deception, I will go in and deliver advanced training to the staff. So one example you mentioned was the RSPCA. The inspectors with the RSPCA, the frontline investigators, are lied to a lot because they're going out unannounced and investigating allegations of animal cruelty. So the stakes are quite high for the animal owner to avoid being prosecuted. Now, I've equipped the Queensland RSPCA inspectors with the ability to manage those conversations, especially once they detect deceptive behaviour. Next month, I'll be going down to Tasmania and delivering the same training to the inspectors down there. It's been so well received by the Queensland guys that the other states are starting to come on board. So that's just one example. Last weekend, I delivered a presentation to property valuers. Now, you'd think, how can this be applied to property valuers?
Yeah.
They are dealing with vendors who are motivated to have their property valued as high as possible so they can get the best sale price. Now, every property has its faults. So what they're coming up against is what's called lies of omission, where the vendor is failing to disclose the faults of the property. So I'm equipping those property valuers with advanced questioning skills so that they can draw out, so that they can elicit full disclosure from the vendors.
Yeah, and I mean, I was thinking about what you do for the RSPCA, and I was thinking, that would have a marvellous application in relation to people working in the area of child protection, for instance, as well, wouldn't it?
Child protection, law enforcement, local law enforcement, it's applicable to all those situations where you're dealing with the customer and there's that potential for the customer to be deceptive.
Yeah. In relation to the lying by omission, for instance, I mean, that's obviously something that recruiters would encounter a lot during the interview process too, isn't it?
Really good point, and that's one of the other things I do is I assist people that are involved in recruitment. So I've talked to you so far about how I may be able to teach people how to conduct those inquiries and those interviews and maximise elicitation and deception detection. There's also the other option of me coming in as a consultant, so as the expert, and becoming involved in those recruitment interviews. So the most obvious application would be when it's a high-stakes, expensive recruitment, like a CEO-type position,
yep,
where the employer doesn't want to make a mistake. So they might bring me in for, say, the second round of interviews when they've shortlisted it and just have me there as a silent observer in the interviews. And then I will give a report in relation to what hotspots, if any, I saw during that interview. at a different level, I might actually be engaged to participate in questioning that candidate, just depending on what the client requires.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose once you've identified those hotspots, do you then sort of advise them on how they can manage the process from there so yeah. that they can drill down and, I guess, get to the truth of the matter or make a better decision?
Yeah, an example would be I've observed a second round recruitment interview, and one of the hotspots I identified was that they appeared to be withholding information, and there were some indicators, which we can talk about later, some non-verbal and verbal indicators at that same time when they were talking about, say, why they left their previous, or why they're leaving their previous, their existing job. And so my advice to the potential employer is maybe do some more due diligence, check that the references they've given from that employer are bona fide and they're not just a friend. And there are websites you can go to where you can hire people to be your referee. So if I'm seeing hotspots around that, I will advise the employer accordingly. If I'm involved in the interview and I identify a hotspot, what I do is I form a hypothesis in my mind. Okay, I've identified this cluster of indicators here in relation to when he was talking about why he's leaving his job. Now I can either choose to probe that further at that point or leave it for a little while. Let the interviewee come back down a little bit, because you'll notice there'll be stress responses. Let them calm down a little bit, change the topic, make them feel comfortable again, then revisit that discussion where I saw the hotspots and see if I get another cluster of indicators. So that then informs me, okay, something's up. I need to explore that a bit further. So as you can see, it's not a quick and easy Pinocchio's nose kind of thing where you can go, aha, he's lying.
Yeah, don't you wish people's noses just grew every time they told a lie? It would be a lot easier.
It would
be a very different world. It sounds, you know, when you explain it, it sounds like such an intricate skill that could potentially take years to master. Is this something that anyone can learn to do?
Like a lot of things, when you first start, there's a very steep learning curve and you get some easy, quick wins in the early days. It's what you do with it afterwards that makes the difference. So yes, you can greatly improve your awareness in a short period of time, but you mentioned intricacies, correct. Yes, it takes a while just to hone that and become expert at it, and it comes with practice. But in the workshops, the masterclass that we'll be delivering soon, we'll give people those quick wins so that they can really upskill very quickly. And it's almost like a veil has been lifted from your vision. You come away seeing so much more. It's actually quite confronting for a few days, because you think, oh my God, I'm taking in so much more information and data. What was I blind before? It's almost like I said, that veil being lifted off when you have this skill set under your belt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, before we started the interview today, you were talking about deception ease, and you were saying that it is like almost like learning a different language, isn't it? It's like learning French or Japanese. I know you start some of your seminars with speaking in Japanese, and that's how you help people to identify when they know deception ease. Is that right?
That's correct. So I will open in Japanese just to surprise people and put them in a situation where they're not sure what's being said to them. And that's how I believe we're going about our daily lives now, where there are these indicators of deceptive intent, but we're just not seeing them because we're not aware of them and we don't know what to look for. And so it's like learning a new language. All of a sudden, you can understand. So imagine what it'd be like to all of a sudden understand Japanese when it's being spoken to you. What just sounded like gobbledygook to you up until this point in your life, suddenly you're able to comprehend. This is the experience that my students have when I give them the reliable indicators, non-verbal and verbal, of deceptive intent. They have some really quick wins. And in the masterclass, we look at some video, and invariably the students are just blown away by their own new superpowers, if you will.
yeah, that's what it would feel like. It would feel like you had bionic hearing or something, you know, or X-ray vision almost, wouldn't it? Because you've got those skills all of a sudden to identify when people are trying to deceive you. And this is an application that can be used for not just people working for large organisations or in recruitment, but I'm imagining that small business people could really benefit from this as well, because they're recruiting and hiring people and making those crucial decisions that could make or break their business.
Yeah, they're doing everything themselves. All the time. That's right. Yeah. They're doing it all themselves. And they don't necessarily have the experience, but because it's just them, they have to do it. No one else is going to do it for them. So they have the option of being skilled up by me or bringing me in to assist them with that.
Can you give me some ideas of the typical sorts of deceptive behaviour that you might look for, just in a nutshell, I guess? I mean, I know there's a lot more to this. This is a big subject. But just, I guess, any examples of the sorts of things that you might look for if you were interviewing a job candidate, for instance?
One of the most reliable nonverbal indicators to look for is the head shake or head nod that doesn't match the words that are coming out of the mouth. So they might be nodding their head, but actually giving you a denial or a negative type response, and vice versa, shaking their head left to right, but answering in the affirmative. So you're seeing that what's coming out of the mouth is not matching the body language. That's actually one of the most reliable nonverbal indicators to look out for. But there is a caveat. With any of this deception detection identification, there needs to be a cluster of indicators. Remember I said there's no Pinocchio's nose?
That's right, yeah.
Right, so it's really important to understand that there must be at least two of these indicators for the behaviour to be significant. You cannot just jump to conclusions based on one. And as I said before, you may note this cluster. So this might be a combination of shaking their head but giving an affirmative response. And it's a very subtle head shake, by the way. Mm. You really have to get out of your own way and observe the person who's speaking.
Yep.
We as native speakers of English tend not to look too much at the body language or the facial expressions. We tend to focus on extracting meaning from what's being said and try and match it to our preconceptions. To become a better lie detector, you have to kind of get that out of the way and take in so much more. So yes, that very subtle head shake with an affirmative response might be matched with, say, some eye-blocking behaviour. Now that can take, in the case of, say, women, they'll use their pinky finger and just scratch the outer corner of their eye as they're responding.
Oh my gosh, I think I've done that when I've been lying. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I have.
So if you've got a combination of I ask you the question and then you pause, and pausing can be a sign of increased cognitive load that comes with lying. You pause before responding much longer than you've paused before responding to now. Then you do the eye-blocking behaviour of using your pinky to scratch the outer corner of your eye, and then you answer in the affirmative with a subtle head shake, you've got a cluster of three. That's significant. So that informs me that I need to explore that further.
Okay, now we were also talking the other day about how, you know, there's a few misconceptions about what lying behaviour looks like. Like, for instance, people commonly think that if someone doesn't look you in the eye when they're talking to you, that it means that they're lying or hiding something. Is that correct?
Not necessarily so. You pick any person out on the street right now and ask them, what does deceptive eye contact look like? And they'll say exactly what you've just said. You're right. Lack of eye contact. Not necessarily so. Because we all think that to be the case, what do? When we're lying, we compensate and we give too much eye contact. But there is something that can happen with the eyes, like I just mentioned, the eye-blocking behaviour, but also under high enough cognitive load, the person may break off eye contact and fix their vision on an inanimate object momentarily so that they can reduce that cognitive load, catch up, think about what they're saying, and then they'll re-establish. So it's not a shifty, slippery kind of lack of eye contact. It's more of, I can't keep up with my thought processes and maintain eye contact, so I'm just going to fixate on something inanimate so I can bring myself back, regroup, and then come back and tell you. And there's also one more, but we'll keep that for the masterclass.
Okay, I'm sure there's lots of great tips. I can't wait. This is a show largely for private investigators. We've heard about how deception detection has a wide range of applications for business and individuals. How can it be useful for PIs?
Well, if you are a factual investigator, this is very good for you. because it will allow you to manage your interviews so much better. You will see so much more, and it will inform you as to where the hotspots are so that you can focus your inquiries with a laser focus where you're going to get the biggest bang for buck.
Sounds like a really, really handy little part of a PI's toolkit, to be honest with you. So it would be really great to see a few PIs at this masterclass, I think. Okay, so let's finish up with one last tip on how to spot a liar before we go.
Okay, so as I've said to you before, baselining is important. I don't know, we've talked too much about it in this podcast, but baselining is very important. You need to have an understanding as much as possible of what that person's normative behaviour looks like. What is their body language looking like when they're under low stress conditions? Everyone has individual idiosyncratic body language habits. If you can spend as much time with that target person as possible and work out what their habits are, that will tell you what you need to ignore. So for example, pacifying behaviours such as rubbing your thighs with both of your hands can, under the correct context, be an indicator. However, if during the whole conversation with this person they've been rubbing their thighs, well, they're probably cold or they're probably nervous, but not necessarily about what it is you're talking about. So you need to ignore that. However, if while you've been baselining them they haven't rubbed their thighs once, and then you start asking the critical questions, and based on context, there's a possibility that they may be motivated to lie to you, and you see this sudden appearance of thigh rubbing, which is self-pacifying behaviour, combined with other indicators, there you go. You've got yourself a cluster, and that's something that tells you I need to explore that a bit further.
So that's a good one to sort of, you know, practice on your husband or wife, someone who you know really well, to see, you know, I mean, I guess because you can see when they're behaving slightly differently. But if it's somebody that you've first, you know, you've only just met, yeah, you're going to have to observe a little bit more closely and look for a number, a cluster of signals to make your decision before you can make a decision about whether they're lying.
Correct.
Well, look, thank you so much, Jeremy Kesby, for coming on the show. You've been really fascinating, as I knew you would be. And if you're interested to learn the art and science of deception detection for yourself, we're running a full-day deception detection masterclass with Jeremy on the Sunshine Coast on Saturday, November the 8th. You can book on our website at cloakinvestigations.com.au or send us an email at admin@cloakinvestigations.com.au. Thanks again, Jeremy.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Jeremy Kesby. And if you'd like to know more about our Deception Detection Masterclass, or you'd just like to drop us a line, you can contact us at www.cloakinvestigations.com.au. You can find us on Facebook or send us a tweet at CloakPI. Well, that's the show for today, guys. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.